From Rimsky-Korsakov's Scheherazade, we heard the opening movement, and what a nice way to start the day on an adventurously sunshiny day. And my guest here today, as I mentioned before, Andrew Kohler, is here to talk about this work and a few others that will appear on the concert on Sunday at 4 o'clock. This is the Kalamazoo Junior Symphony Orchestra concert featuring both the concerto competition winner and the Gilmore's special guest artist, Alpin Hong. So I bet the kids are pretty excited for this one.
Incredibly excited, I think. This was, you know, I said to them, our winter concert had such wonderful works, Schubert and Schumann, but of a much more serious sort of introverted bent. And, you know, I think this feels like the celebration after all that sort of probing complexity. This is a much more extroverted, exciting, really celebratory concert.
Mm-hmm. Well, Scheherazade, yes, one of the most detailed, colorful kind of scores you could ask for, and with something for every section of the orchestra to do.
Exactly right. Yeah, there's Scheherazade relies a lot on key players to carry a lot of the weight of the musical material. There's a lot of big solos in it, so that's a great challenge. But it's no less really difficult for everyone else communally. There's plenty of communal playing that's also really difficult. And I think color is just the word we always think of when we refer to this piece, because I mean, Rimsky-Korsakov literally wrote the book on orchestration. He really did pen a treatise about orchestration, and that was one of the things that he was so famously good at. He sort of insisted as a kind of ideological approach to composition. He wanted to push back, along with his nationalist Russian colleagues, against the very German, it seemed to them, ideas about, you know, taking melodies and fragmenting them and developing them very thoroughly and very seriously. And instead said, you know, who doesn't love a good tune? Let's just hear this good tune. Let's make sure it's a good tune. And let's hear it a bunch of times. And the way that we create interest is with color, i.e. with different kinds of instruments playing them. So we'll hear the theme once this way. Then we'll hear it orchestrated in a totally different way. And when the orchestration is as brilliant, as inventive as it is in Rimsky-Korsakov's hands, that does indeed sustain the listener's interest.
I remember that Rimsky-Korsakov was served in the Russian Royal Navy for a few years, back when he was maybe not entirely decided about whether he was going to make music his career. And sometimes people link the fact that he chose this story from Arabian Nights to his experience traveling the worlds and going to many ports and you know, being for a limited time mixed into other cultures.
Yeah. I you know, in a lot of ways, this work is much more the triumph of imagination than it is actual real lived
That's
experience.
True. We're not hearing, you know, modal things from these, you know, actual lifting.
No. You know, he had written an earlier symphonic suite called Antar, which did actually rely on some real Arabic melodies, but ones that were sort of filtered through a French edition. So he had some experience that way, you know, on the printed page with that music. Although he freely admitted that he made no effort in this work to do that, that this was completely music of his own invention. But maybe before we talk about all that, we should explain first a little bit more about Scheherazade and what this tale is trying to tell. It is surely one of the most famous pieces of classical music in a lot of ways, and it is beautifully evocative because it uses a frame story and then smaller, suggestive of smaller stories within them in these four movements. Scheherazade, of course, references the tale of 1001 Nights, which had become so wonderfully popular in Europe in the 19th century, translated into French editions and to many other languages. And the basic idea is that there's a sultan who really has decided that women are unfaithful and he can't trust them. So I suppose he's going to teach them a lesson somehow by marrying a new wife each day and then killing her that night. This was all somehow, I don't know, vaguely.
I always thought she was, like, executed the next morning.
Well,
then the wedding comes, you know, in the afternoon, and then the whole cycle starts again.
Yeah, maybe you're right. I'm not exactly sure what time he chose for the execution. But at any rate, he's
kind of hard when you think about the logistics of it.
Yeah, he's a vicious and terrible person. But we ignore that part in the story, I guess, and instead look past to the idea that this one woman decides that she will marry him, Scheherazade, and is very clever because what she wants to do is stay her execution by telling these incredible tales. These are the 1001 Nights, and she successfully stays her execution for so long that he discovers that he's in fact truly legitimately in love with her, and she's won the heart of this otherwise bloodthirsty, maniacal person.
And she invents the concept of the cliffhanger.
The cliffhanger, exactly right, yes. So she tells these tales, and Rimsky-Korsakov was very cagey about how much he wanted to suggest specific tales. So initially there were movement titles, but then he retracted them in the second edition. It's the usual cat and mouse game that composers play, where they are inspired by something perhaps quite tangible, but then they regret it because it feels to them like perhaps the audience is waiting to hear particular narrative plot points, when really what they're looking to do is create an atmosphere more, something that's as suggestive. So the movement that we just played, that first movement, is, or originally had the title, The Sea and Sinbad's Ship. So perhaps, getting back to your original point about him traveling the world, maybe this is the one part that does actually have a little bit more sort of lived experience. And it's not so much the experience of being in the ancient Persian world, of course, which would have been impossible time-wise, but even in the what would have been the contemporaneous Arabic or Iranian world. None of that, but more that he was on a ship at least, and that wonderful rocking motion that we hear in the cellos throughout most of this that really sort of sets the pace, or that sort of dissolving, you know, fluttering bird-like motive in the high woodwinds that comes at the end, twice in the piece at the end of those passages. All of those seem very much tied to the sea and its rhythms, and I think he's done a really wonderful job capturing that.
Yeah, the detail of the imagery, like you said, he zooms into almost the foam, but then the deep rocking waves.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think those details, I think he's careful to want to say that those details should be secondary to the overall impression, right? The mood, the atmosphere of being out on the open seas. And that's what he's trying to capture, rather than any particular story of Sinbad the Sailor, of which there are several in the 1001 Nights.
There are four movements.
Correct.
A symphony in a way.
Yes, although he was very pointedly careful to call it a symphonic suite, again, to avoid any notion that this was going to be a symphony in the Austro-Germanic mold, which would require, you know, certain rigorous working out of motivic ideas. And again, he wanted to push back against that and sort of live a kind of fantasy. And that's indeed why it's on this program that we're calling Flights of Fancy. You know, these composers who were looking to find other means of expression other than the most rigorous formal molds that had been handed down to them.
Tell me who will be playing the solo violin part.
That is our concertmaster of many years now, Leah Jin, who is graduating this year. It is her last year. She is still deciding, I think, on a college, although it does not look like she's going to be doing music professionally. Instead, she'll, I think, at last discussion, is looking to a career maybe in medicine. Eventually, long term. She's got some very impressive prospects. I think she's choosing between MIT and Harvard and maybe a few other spots that I don't even know about. But she's a fantastic violinist.
Yes, and pianist.
And she's a very fine pianist as well. Yes, one of those people who's just sort of upsetting, really, how talented she is. It's been, in a way, a lot of the programming of this piece was done with her in mind, because I knew that, you know, this would be her last year in the orchestra, and she's been such a fine leader for so many years and been with us for so many years. So really, I think, has been a central figure in the orchestra's life for so long that it seemed fitting to honor her with what is one of the largest concertmaster solos in the repertoire. And the reason is because she essentially takes on the role of Scheherazade, the namesake of the entire piece. listeners might recall from the very opening of that first movement, there's a very stern theme at the beginning, which generally most people, although Rimsky-Korsakov never confirmed it, think is associated with the Sultan, that kind of anger. And that's answered after a brief interlude with this swirling violin solo. And that's, and in this case, Rimsky-Korsakov did confirm that. That is Scheherazade beginning to weave her tale. Mm-hmm.
We should remind listeners that the concert is this Sunday at 4 o'clock in Chenery Auditorium, as all Kalamazoo Junior Symphony Orchestra concerts are. We have lots more to talk about. But before we jump back into Scheherazade, I would like to mention this is a very special season because there will be a tour coming up in the summertime. And this is one of the last public performances to make your support known and be there to send the KJSO to South Africa in a solid way.
Yeah, it's thank you for mentioning that. I mean, this is a really exciting season for us because as we bridge this, the end of our 79th season and then get ready to launch our 80th season, we in the middle are going to embark on another international tour, or the second in my tenure in the orchestra, and I have lost count of how many in the orchestra's history. One of the really beautiful things for me is that the last time we went on tour, I went on tour with this group, it was to China, and the group previously had toured Europe several times, had been to South America, had been to Australia, and so it suddenly dawned on me that we had visited nearly every inhabited continent in the world, except Africa so far. And that's one of the reasons why I was so excited about this idea that we would go to South Africa. And so it's happening. We are leaving in late June. We will have another concert on June 22nd. That's Friday at 7:30, in the Light Fine Arts Center at Kalamazoo College. That'll be our Bon Voyage concert on our way. But we are really excited to get a chance to see another part of the world and to bring a little piece of Kalamazoo to another part of the world.
That is very exciting. Well, let's hear some more music. Where should we go in Scheherazade?
I think as a contrast to the slow rocking waves, we might jump all the way to the finale. In between, we have an incredible sort of dance-like movement, the second movement called the Kalandar Prince. The Kalandars were a religious sect related to the Sufis or the whirling dervishes of Turkey. So they spun around a lot. So there are all these wonderful woodwind solos that seem like they spin around themselves.
Did they also keep track of months and years or something? What's
I don't know. I think that's a linguistic coincidence, but I don't know. Maybe there is something about that. And then in the third movement, there's a story of a young prince and the princess. And I think that's the sort of slow, beautiful movement of the work, all of which are great. But maybe I think it's time for a little bit more pointed excitement. So we'll skip to the festival at Baghdad, the central city where so many of these stories and the 1001 Nights originate. And again, atmosphere is what's key here. There's not necessarily, I think, any specific story being told at this festival, but it is clear that it is a very exciting time in Baghdad and that much is going on. And just before we get there, we hear the Sultan's impatience at the beginning of this. Yeah, he's starting to catch on that he's being forced to stay his executions by these wonderful stories, and he wants to hear the conclusion of some of these stories.
Thank you.
Even one movement is very satisfying when you're listening to Scheherazade. I'm with conductor Andrew Kohler, who will lead the Kalamazoo Junior Symphony Orchestra on Sunday at 4 o'clock in Chenery Auditorium in the final official concert of the season. Mm-hmm. As we mentioned before, there will be a concert on June 22nd, specifically for sending off the KJSO in style to tour South Africa.
That's right. Yeah. We can't wait.
Where does this piece, Scheherazade, appear on the program on Sunday?
Oh, so this Sunday, Scheherazade will be the piece that closes the program. As we just heard at the end of that wonderful fourth movement, it comes full circle in a very beautiful, very satisfying way. Though it's not for all the energies of that festival in Baghdad, you can see that eventually we sort of regroup with the initial story, that music of the sea comes back. And then it sort of crashes on the cliffs. Sinbad's ship is continually crashing in various places. And then we are sort of pulled out to the frame story one last time, where we hear Scheherazade's beautiful solo violin line one final time. And then we finally then hear the Sultan's theme, now kind of subdued in the low strings underneath, as I think Scheherazade finally gets a good night of sleep for the first time in a long time, I imagine. So it's an amazingly satisfying conclusion, I think, and it's a beautiful way to end our program. But on the first half of the program, we've got no less exciting things to offer to our audience. And of course, we began, as I think we mentioned earlier in the hour, with our concerto competition winner. This is our co-principal cellist, Lydia Schubkegel, who has really blossomed, really come so far as a young musician, also a senior and off to college, college and probably music study in the fall. She is performing the first movement of the Lalo D minor cello concerto. This is the one work on the program that I would say is the most serious, the most sober, the most still tied to traditional form. Although that's not to say that Lalo was in any way uninventive. He had a great success. He sort of came to composition late in life had successes only in his 40s or 50s or something like that. The first one being, of course, his perhaps equally or even more famous violin concerto symphony hybrid, which he calls the Symphony Espanol, full of Spanish themes. Lalo distantly had some sort of Spanish heritage, although he was born French. And in this cello concerto, maybe just a few little hints of that are there, but mostly it's a really probing look and at the cello's lower register. You know, kind of uses a lot of those dark hues. It's a fantastic work, and it then kind of shows a nice contrast, I think, since the name of this program is Flights of Fancy, and this is the sort of more sober, serious approach to something like The Rhapsody in Blue by George Gershwin, which we play afterwards. And that will be done with, world-famous pianist and native son of Kalamazoo, Alpen Hong. And we're just so excited and so grateful to the Gilmore Festival for arranging to have him perform with us. If you've never heard Alpen Hong before, never seen him before, he's playing all these family concerts this week, and this our Sunday concert together will be sort of the culminating concert of his residency. I don't know how else to put this. In the best sense of this word, I need to take a nap after spending any time with Alpen Hong, because he is so vivacious, has so much energy. I don't know what he runs on, but it's incredible. You get sucked up into this vortex of energy, and that's something that he transmits on stage, which is part of why he is such an unbelievably charismatic and compelling performer. He's also just great with the students in the youth orchestra. So, you know, he came to our rehearsal last Sunday, and we encouraged afterwards students to stay and have pizza with him. And it was amazing. I mean, he was so great with them, so open. And we had a very intense, very serious discussion about The Last Jedi and everything that was wrong with it, and everybody got to weigh in, and Alpin had some very strong feelings about it. But it's great, you know, he's able to talk about, you know, the loftiest things in our art form, and also the kinds of sort of fun pop culture things that all of us enjoy as well.
I can double down on that. I sure noticed his energy when he was here last Friday to talk about the family concerts. There are it's a punishing schedule, but he's one of those kinds of fellows who's just unfazed by something like that. And you can find the schedule on the Gilmore's website, which is thegilmore.org. And details are also on the KJSO.org page for the Sunday's concert and for the summer tour. Alpin Hong, how does he play Gershwin with the same kind of
exactly
energy?
Yeah, I mean,
and panache? He seems well suited for this music.
I think, you know, he said that this is in some ways has become a little bit of a calling card for him. I mean, he's so brilliant and so much repertoire, but I think because this piece has that kind of really individual and a very energetic approach. I think this is one that he's become associated with, you know, and because he plays it so brilliantly. And it was just like a torrent of energy when he came and read it with us on Sunday. It was wonderful. Kind of, you know, I think we had, of course, every time we have any kind of concerto or have a guest soloist, I do my best to prepare the group and. But it was amazing. You felt like the whole orchestra had to wake up a little bit. He wanted everything a little bit faster, a little bit more, bolder. He really wants the thing to kind of be on fire in a wonderful way. All music should be, and it's wonderful to have that spark lit under us to try and keep up with him.
Oh, here's a terrific place to tell a story, a verified story about Irving S. Gilmore, for whom the festival is named. He was, of course, a businessman in Kalamazoo, but as a young man, studied music in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And one night, his teacher called his students together and said, I have a friend who is about to premiere a new piece of music and needs a quick run through in front of a small crowd just to see how it works out.
Mm-hmm.
And Irving S. Gilmore arrived a bit late and he couldn't find a seat. He sat down right in the front of the room in front of the piano while George Gershwin ran through Rhapsody in Blue for the first time.
Get out. That's wonderful. That's incredible.
This seems so fitting.
Perfect. Yes, exactly. All the strands unite somehow at this very moment. The genesis of that piece is also very wonderful because even before that, Gershwin apparently didn't know he was meant to write it. Paul Whiteman was this violist turned band leader who was very keen on sort of making jazz more reputable or something, or giving it a more serious sheen, or showing that the more serious concert music could be mixed with the jazz idiom. And he was going to put together a concert, and he sort of talked to Gershwin about it, but it was kind of unclear. And then he found out that someone else was thinking of something similar. So he rushed to print, and all of a sudden Gershwin and his brother read an article in the newspaper that said, George Gershwin is composing a new concerto for this Paul Whiteman concert. And Gershwin thought, oh, well, that's news to me. I didn't know about this. So he calls Whiteman up and they have a discussion, and finally Whiteman convinces him, but he says, all right, I'm not going to do a full concerto, but I will give you at least a rhapsody. And a rhapsody is, again, to get back to this thematic idea of flights of fancy, it's a much looser form, right? It opens up more avenues for exploration. And sure enough, in Gershwin's hands, it does cohere as a work because, I mean, he is surely one of history's greatest melodists. I mean, there's no tune that isn't seemingly, you know, touched by an almost divine gift. And so they flow endlessly through this wonderful piece and are all tied together by these virtuosic piano cadenzas. And of course, it has this famous beginning, right? The clarinet glissando. And that too almost never was, because apparently it was just a scale. And it was the clarinetist in Whiteman's band who at the first rehearsal, as a maybe kind of a joke or something like that, just sort of slid up the rest of the way. And Gershwin said, I love it. Let's do it.
Found a player who could do both jazz and classical in that first band.
Yeah.
And you have a clarinetist with the slide happening?
Slide's happening.
Okay. On Sunday. Let's remind folks again, 4 o'clock Sunday afternoon in Chanry Auditorium, the Kalamazoo Junior Symphony Orchestra, Flights of Fancy. This concert, attending this concert, will help go towards sending them to South Africa in the summer, as will a follow-up concert on June 22nd. What's the venue for that?
That one is going to be at Kalamazoo College, but this Sunday will be in our regular home at Chenery Auditorium.
Okay. Well, any last thoughts, Andrew? This has been a great preview. There's so much to look forward to.
I think this is a really exciting way for us to celebrate our outgoing senior class and the end of this year. I think between those seniors and between the dynamo that is Alpen Hong, I think there's lots to enjoy in our performance, and I hope people can join us.
Well, thank you for joining me on WMUK.
Always a pleasure. Thanks.